From The Recount, I'm Rena Ninen, and you're listening to The Recount Daily Pod. Today's Wednesday, October 20th.
20 kids per week dying of COVID is not morally acceptable. We recall millions of cribs and baby toys whenever there's any one single death.
That was Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding, epidemiologist and senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists, talking about how COVID affected children across the world. He and Dr. Bill Koo, retired scientist and a former senior lecturer and researcher at Columbia University, will join me to discuss the ongoing pandemic a little later on. But first, your morning headlines. A federal grand jury has indicted Nebraska Congressman Jeff Fortenberry for lying to the FBI about 2016 re-election contributions from a Lebanese-Nigerian billionaire. The Republican lawmaker is charged with one count of scheming to falsify and conceal material facts and two counts of making false statements to federal investigators. Those charges each carry a maximum of 5 years in federal prison. Fortenberry anticipated his indictment in a YouTube video this week where he denounced the FBI agents who visited his home in 2019.
They've accused me of lying to them and are charging me with this. We're shocked. We're stunned. I feel so personally betrayed. We thought we were trying to help. And so now we will have to fight.
Fortenberry has agreed to appear in court today for his arraignment. The kidnappers behind the abduction in Haiti of 16 American missionaries and one Canadian have made their ransom demand, $17 million or $1 million per hostage. State Department personnel and the FBI are in Haiti, but have provided few details on their efforts. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki had this to add.
Kidnapping is widespread and victims regularly include U.S. citizens. We know these groups target U.S. citizens who they assume have the resources and finances to pay ransoms, even if that is not the case.
Next, Facebook will pay up to $14.3 million after settling with the U.S. government over allegations that the company discriminated against U.S. citizens, at least when it came to hiring applicants for over 2,600 jobs. The Department of Justice lawsuit last year charged the company with saving the high-paying roles for foreigners. Most of the money will go to eligible victims of the alleged discrimination. As part of the settlements, the Labor Department will get to look into Facebook's program for foreign job applicants. And now to our interview. Nearly 2 years into the pandemic, the U.S. is seeing a big decrease in COVID cases. Does that mean that the country is closer to coming out of the crisis? And when can we expect our kids under 12 to finally get vaccinated? Today, I'm joined by two of the leading voices in COVID research and analysis, Dr. Bill Koo, retired scientist and former senior lecturer and researcher at Columbia University, and Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding, epidemiologist and senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists. Dr. Koo and Dr. Feigl-Ding both said that I could call them Bill and Eric. I want to thank you both for joining us. I guess my first question, Eric, to you, are we finally emerging out of this pandemic? We've seen a decline in cases. Is the worst behind us with COVID?
Thank you for having me. I think in many ways, we want to think we're over, but I don't think we're over because we've seen waves after waves. And many times, in many countries, Delta variant also hits twice. UK thought they were over Delta, but now UK is having another surge of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths. In US, we obviously have vaccines not being administered enough, as well as we have, of course, with vaccine waning. And all that, as winter approaches, is going to be kind of like the perfect storm for one more big wave, at least, because I do not think we're going to be through this until at least middle of next year.
Middle of next year, interesting. You know, nearly 2,000 Americans are still dying daily. What's your biggest worry, Eric, as we head into cold and flu season? How do you think the flu season will affect COVID?
I think the cold and flu season is going to be much, much harder than we think. In many ways, our Delta wave that we just passed was in the middle of the lowest part of the flu season. So August and September are the lowest months for respiratory illnesses traditionally. And yet we still had a tremendous, tremendous death toll. So as we approach the actual cold and flu respiratory virus season, we have to come to the reality that it will actually be potentially one of the bigger waves that we've seen, given that the variants that we now have are much more contagious last year and much more deadly than the old strains that we had last year. So, and I don't think we are well prepared for that.
Bill, you know, it's interesting because we've heard Dr. Anthony Fauci, the top medical expert in the White House, say, if you're vaccinated, you guys can get together this holiday season. Do you agree with Dr. Fauci?
I think if everybody in the family is vaccinated, it's relatively safe. But because the virus is so contagious in the Delta form, that multi-layer approach is really appropriate for even intimate family gatherings. So masking whenever you're not eating is so advisable because single line of defense is very poor against this very contagious and very virulent Delta strain.
I want to ask you about Colin Powell, who passed away this week due to complications from COVID. What do we know about that? Because he was fully vaccinated.
Colin Powell had multiple myeloma. And for patients and people out there who don't understand, it's a blood cancer, but which the treatments actually destroy the plasma cells that make antibodies. So we've seen a lot of evidence that people who are vaccinated but have multiple myeloma don't respond well and make a lot of antibodies. So their immune response is very, very suppressed. Now, there's obviously T cells, but a lot of the antibodies produced traditionally by the mRNA vaccine is much, much lower and weaker. And that's why this is even more important to protect those around us who can't have a full immune response by vaccinating. By vaccinating to protect our kids, vaccinating to protect cancer patients who can't mount an antibody response as well. And again, to really protect your community is something that oftentimes is so lost in the pandemic. It's not just about yourself. Oh, I'm immune. I've already had COVID. Oh, I'm vaccinated. I don't need to wear a mask. I think that kind of selfish approach has really endangered us. And I think Colin Powell is a perfect example. He is susceptible to COVID even after vaccinating because he has this cancer that obviously makes him very, very vulnerable. And because of that, we've neglected and killed off a lot of people that we love and value in this world, whether it's kids or the elderly. And I think that's the greatest shameful thing. And we should reflect on that. Are we here to only care about ourselves in society, or are we here to also protect others around us?
We've got to take a quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Bill Koo and Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from the Recount and iHeartRadio. I'm joined by Dr. Bill Koo and Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding, and we're talking about the latest research on COVID in America. Bill, I know a lot of people personally who have been vaccinated and are part of these breakthrough cases. They got COVID. What do you think it is that the CDC isn't telling us about breakthrough cases?
50 to 65-year-old adults, once they're vaccinated, are 20 times less likely to get COVID than unvaccinated people. That's an incredible improvement and improves the clinical trial result that vaccines are 95% effective in terms of preventing serious death. But on the other hand, for certain groups of people, like those over 65, who were vaccinated first in the United States in January and February, breakthroughs are a serious problem. And then now, people under 65 may be suffering because vaccines are going to start waning for that group.
Do you believe that the CDC was forthcoming in these breakthrough vaccinations?
I think the CDC was negligent in not tracking them as diligently as other countries. The reason we actually know waning is a thing is because of actually Israel. Israel's Ministry of Health has nationwide surveillance of all breakthroughs, not just hospitalizations. CDC basically back in May said, we're not going to track breakthrough cases. We're only going to track breakthrough hospitalizations, which again, was very, very poor choice, because the transmission is what actually will allow the virus to spread to more people. That's, in a certain way, their blind spot. They said, well, transmission doesn't matter as long as hospitalization is good. Well, we have way too many people unprotected. We have, obviously, anti-vaxxers, vaccine hesitant, and we have children who are not vaccinated. And, of course, the other thing that they didn't see around the corner was waning, and that a lot of elderly are, you know, susceptible. And this waning is significant. We're not talking about, like, you know, 5-10%. We're talking about, like, down to less than 50% efficacy against infection. And I think the CDC completely dropped the ball. And of course, all at the same time in May, they also said vaccinated people don't need a mask. By May, we already saw there were breakthrough cases, and also that vaccinated breakthrough cases even happened asymptomatically and just transmit onwards to vulnerable people. And I think that was CDC's greatest mistake.
Do we know why the efficacy of the vaccine drops off after 6 months?
Most vaccines, well, it's not surprising. I mean, every year, the seasonal flu vaccine is given every year because they're designed to wane after 6 to 8 months. Okay. And seasonal vaccines are not even anywhere near as effective as the COVID vaccines. They're typically only 40 to 60% effective. And COVID mRNA vaccines and miracles by those standards, they're 95% effective from the beginning. But over time, they wane. And the CDC data shows that waning. And they should have released that data to the public, to scientists, and to the FDA much earlier than they actually did.
We're going to pause, take a quick break. We'll be right back with Dr. Bill Ku and Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding on the Recount Daily Pod. Welcome back to the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from the Recount and iHeartRadio. I'm joined by Dr. Bill Ku and Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding. We're talking about the current state of COVID in America. I want to ask you about children under 12. I'm a mom of two kids under 12. It feels like this has taken forever. Is there a holdup here? And what would you say to parents who are worried about vaccinating their children?
Kids are extremely vulnerable. Kids are not protected. There's been a lot of misinformation that kids are practically immune. Oh, don't worry about kids. Kids' death rates are so low. And we should not use the comparison that kids are lower risk than adults, or kids are die less or hospitalized less than an elderly vaccinated person. Because kids are not supposed to die. Kids are not supposed to be hospitalized. You know, 20 kids per week dying of COVID is not morally acceptable. We recall millions of cribs and baby toys whenever there's any one single death. And for us to tolerate 20 deaths a week, in addition to the hospitalization and the long COVID risk, which are substantial, it is just morally reprehensible.
What do we know about the kids' vaccine, Eric? They probably won't get the same amount as the adults get in a vial.
This is actually very tricky because kids' doses for 5 to 11, the one that's about to be authorized and approved, is one-third the dose of adults. So instead of the 30 microgram per dose for Pfizer adult dose, the 5 to 11 age group will have a 10 microgram. This actually creates a logistical hurdle because you can't just divide by three, take adult dose, divide by three. The volume is too low, according to experts. So what they're going to do once the vaccine for kids 5 to 11 are authorized and approved, they're actually going to get a specific pediatric vaccine vials. And these vials have to be redistributed across the country.
Because it was a bit of a disaster, Eric, the first rollout, you know, at the beginning of the year when the vials first came out for adults.
Exactly. It took a while to get the distribution for these vials out. And we're going to have to potentially repeat it. And hopefully we can get kids vaccinated the day after the CDC approves it. But I hope that the logistical supply chain and delivery system is up to par when kids can get these vaccines.
I want to ask you about monoclonal antibodies that have been used as a treatment for COVID patients. It was used on President Trump when he was infected in October. How much is the treatment? Does it really work? Is it effective in treating COVID?
I think monoclonal antibody is a very effective treatment for people as a second line defense It should not be used as a substitute for vaccines. It's much more expensive than vaccines, at least 100 times more costly per dose than vaccines, which are given out free to people.
It's a one-hit wonder in many ways, and it can also lead to a lot of mutations. So long-term monoclonal antibodies, it may not work months or a year from now because of the nature that the virus will adapt to the antibody. And so this is why vaccines are better, because vaccines are polyclonal. It designs many attack patterns against the virus. Well, the monoclonal antibody is only a single strike approach.
Eric, I want to ask you also about Merck's antiviral oral drug. It's supposed to reduce the risk of becoming sick or ending up in the hospital. At least three other oral COVID-19 pills are also expected to have clinical data by the end of the year. What are your thoughts on oral pills?
I think the Merck's molnupiravir antiviral drug is very good, potential. It's the first dry pill antiviral that actually reduces mortality. There is a slight concern, though, that it's mutagenic, that it's designed to cause mutations in the coronavirus so that it can't replicate. But I think overall, it's incredibly, even more powerful than I think monoclonal antibodies, because you can take this while immediately after you're infected, and it'll reduce hospitalization by 50%.
Yeah, but again, I still must warn that it should not be used as a frontline replacement for vaccines. Vaccines are 95% effective. The antiviral pills are 50% effective. That means 10 times less effective in terms of preventing death or hospitalization than vaccines.
When do you think that people under 65 will be able in this country, in the United States, to qualify for a booster?
Boosters are already quite widely available if you are in a high-risk risk factor group under 65, or if you work in an occupational setting with high exposures, such as teachers or public transit or first responders. But I think it should be much more widely declared, because in Israel, you're not fully vaxxed until you're triple vaxxed. And I think that this weird information approach of, well, depending on your high exposure, it leaves a lot of confusion. It's, again, we're not taking the precautionary approach to protect our young people and protecting those around us who are immunocompromised.
Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding and Dr. Bill Ku, I want to thank you both so much for sharing your insights on COVID with us.
Thank you for inviting us.
Stay safe.
And now let's look ahead at what else is happening today. The Senate is expected to hold a procedural vote on the Freedom to Vote Act. The bill would set standards for same day and even automatic voter registration. It would also make Election Day, which falls on Tuesday, a public holiday. The bill is said to have the support of 50 Senate Democrats, but would need another 10 from Republicans to pass over a filibuster by the GOP. California Representative Ro Khanna and celebrity Paris Hilton will hold a press conference on institutional child abuse in D.C. this morning. The event is a push for a federal bill of rights for children in places like group homes and treatment facilities. Employees at Netflix will be holding a walkout this morning to protest the company's handling of a comedy special by Dave Chappelle that they call transphobic. Several entertainers will appear in a video PSA in support of the rally that includes Jonathan Van Ness, who appears in Netflix's Queer Eye reboot. A group of trans employees at the company released a list of demands ahead of the walkout, which includes investing in trans creators and an acknowledgement of Netflix's responsibility of the harm caused by transphobic content, a point that Netflix co-CEO Ted Sarandos rejected in a company-wide memo last week. This is the Recount Daily Pod, a podcast from The Recount. Our thanks to Dr. Bill Ku, retired scientist and a former senior lecturer and researcher at Columbia University, and Dr. Eric Feigl-Ding, epidemiologist and senior fellow at the Federation of American Scientists, for being on the show. And if you like this episode, I hope you'll subscribe to The Recount Daily Pod and leave us a rating on the Apple Podcast app. I'm your host, Rena Ninen.